basically wafer and then like a chocolate covering. But when you'd have a bite, like it left like a waxy film in your mouth. It was because it was made of like vegetable oils. It was like fake chocolate. It wasn't like real chocolate. Imagine my disappointment. You're going to break a diet, you know, break it properly. But I still love the ad. Speaking of what Mark had to mention about the fear that he got from the hippo. Hippo land speed gets up to 48 kilometers an hour. If my class 2 book was anything to go by, I think Bruce Fordyce was 45. Right? I can't remember. So 48 kilometers an hour. And then on land. And then in water, they can swim at 8 kilometers an hour. There was also a video going around of a hippo swimming. They move incredibly fast. So don't underestimate those guys. The bell has gone. I'm sorry. I've run over. Guys, it's such a pleasure being in your company again. Tomorrow is Friday. Yay, yay, yay. Looking forward to the weekend. I hope you have a wonderful day today. Please stay safe out there. Whatever age you are, we are clearly all vulnerable. And again, rest in peace, Wendy Zibande, my brother.
On ktalk.co.za.
On the app.
On DSTV channel 885.
And across the city on 567 AM.
Join the conversation.
This is Cape Talk.
This is Eyewitness News.
Good morning, I'm Regan Thorpe. The African Union's managed to secure a provisional 270 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines for the continent. AU Boss President Cyril Ramaphosa says all of the jabs will be administered this year. This is on top of 600 million doses already promised, but it's still not enough to vaccinate the entire continent. There are fears poorer countries will wait longer than richer ones to be inoculated. Well, back home, a complaint against Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng has been escalated. The Judicial Service Commission has referred the matter to the Judicial Conduct Committee. Health advocacy group the African Alliance has taken the step after Mogoeng sparked outrage with comments he made late last year about COVID-19 vaccines. It's described the remarks made during a ceremony to honour health workers in Gauteng as false and dangerous. The jurist has repeatedly defended his comments. South Africa hopes to receive its first batch of a vaccine, hopefully by the end of this month. Moving to China now, a team of experts from the World Health Organization has touched down in Wuhan. They're to probe the origins of the coronavirus. It comes as China reported its first death from COVID-19 in 8 months. The investigation had been delayed after authorities initially denied the team entry, claiming they didn't have the required travel documents. The virus was first detected in the central Chinese city in late 2019 and has since billowed out across the world, killing nearly 2 million people so far. The state capture inquiry continues to hear evidence today, with its focus still firmly on Eskom. Earlier this week, the commission heard testimony from former group chief executive Machela Corkle, and tomorrow another former executive, Brian Molefe, is expected to take the witness stand. Gay Davis explains.
Two whistleblowers who lifted the lid on the machinations of Gupta-linked company Trillion are set to testify before Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo today. They are Bianca Goodson, a former chief executive of Trillion, and Musilo Mutepu, the former chief executive of Trillion Financial Advisory. Both Goodson and Mutepu gave evidence before the parliamentary inquiry into Eskom and other state-owned enterprises. Also set to appear is the former acting director general of public enterprises, Mamietsi Mokolo. She was appointed by then-minister Lynn Brown to head up the department shortly before Tsidiso Mtono became Eskom's chief executive officer in 2014. Gay Davis, Eyewitness News.
The Western Cape Social Development MEC will continue talking with the Social Security Agency over a backlog in temporary disability grants. Thousands of beneficiaries have been queuing to renew their grant applications across the province. MEC Shana Fernandez has met with SASSA officials yesterday, and another meeting's on the cards for tomorrow.
There is a concern regarding social relief of distress, as many people are now left without any funds and they are stranded and destitute.
Moving abroad again, Donald Trump has been impeached yet again. The outgoing U.S. president may only be in power for another few days, but it's become untenable, argue Democrats and even some Republicans. He's become the first president in U.S. history to be impeached twice. But he'll stay where he is for now until he has to leave the White House next week, as the Senate still has to vote on the impeachment. Lawmakers this week passed an article charging him with incitement of insurrection, for his role in last week's deadly attack on the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's clear skies today with a gentle westerly breeze and a high of 32 degrees. The top story in Eyewitness News this hour, the African Union secured a provisional 270 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines for the continent.
Eyewitness News, in touch, in tune, and independent. For the latest, visit ewn.co.za.
This is Cape Talk.
Join the conversation
with Kino Cummies today.
Testing, testing, testing. Okay, it's working, the voice. Great to be back. It's an absolute honor to be broadcasting to you once again. I'll get into that. You are listening to Today on 567 Medium Wave Cape Talk. I am Kino Cummies with you all the way through until 12 o'clock. Those lines are open. Please take advantage of them. If I remember the numbers, 021-446-0567 is the one number you can dial. And 072-567-1567 is the WhatsApp line that you can use. So take advantage of them. I really don't feel like talking a lot today, so I'm going to leave the talking up to you in the open line. But let's get talking. What else is coming up on the show? Let me tell you about that next.
Today with Kino Cummies.
We all have a voice.
Use yours.
Call 021-446-0567.
Join the conversation. On Cape Talk.
Okay, so between 9 and 10, the lines, as you know, are open. But after 10, just the latest COVID stats there, some positive numbers that we are cautious about, but Dr. Keith Kluter, head of health in the Western Cape, will be telling you more about that. After 10 o'clock, we're going to talk about the SASSA debacle. How is it we can find money for SAA, but we can't find money for some of the poorest people who need assistance? After 11, Jan Vermeulen talks tech. That's the show in a nutshell. A lot else in between as well. But I want to go straight to your calls this morning on 021-446-0567 and WhatsApp on 072-567-1567. Welcome to Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk. The open line.
Call 021-446-0567.
So before I go to calls, I see Paul's called in already. I just want to thank you for the phenomenal support that you've given. I couldn't respond to enough messages on Facebook and on other platforms, and it's been really humbling. And I really, really want to thank you for taking the time and for all the prayers, etc. Right? It certainly has been a journey. It's caused a paradigm shift in my thinking. I'll sort of get to that a bit later. But, you know, at the end of the day, just very quickly, what I went through is I spent about 5-6 days self-isolating, but I had a temperature of 39.5 degrees, and they told me, oh, you've got to take Panado, right? Okay, so take the Panado. I take the Panado, temperature goes down, headache disappears for about an hour and a half, and then it comes back roaring, and then I can only take it in another 3 hours. And that was the sort of trend up until, I think, day 5, day 6, and I was so weak and eventually ended up at UCT Academic. So it's been one hell of a journey, but they've been phenomenal people. You know, your friends are. I know my wife's my friend. She was absolutely phenomenal. And then my broker, Tony Atia, he drove all the way from Camps Bay to bring me all these, some of the essentials that I needed. I also had my GP, Dr. Les Pisser. He did 4 trips in 40 minutes to get me all the meds that I needed. Another good friend of mine, Nazar Pangakai's daytime job is being with Brimstone Investments, but he's brought through some home remedies. So there were just a lot of really good people, that assisted. And, you know, I can't mention all their names, but on the medical side as well, Dr. Richard Friedland, who's the CEO of Netcare, was one of the most helpful people. I ended up at UCT Academic Hospital. And someone who's an angel, who's a godsend, is Professor Kirtan Dida, one of the top pulmonologists in the country. And he was responsible, him and his team, for getting not just myself, but getting my mom back to health as well. I picked her up about 2 days ago from UCT Academic. And then finally, one of our listeners, Jenny, told me about 5-year-old Seth and 3-year-old Cole, who kept asking when I'm coming back. So I just want to thank everybody for the support. I really appreciate it. If I didn't mail you back, if I didn't write back, I do apologize, but it is good to be back. So let's go to Paul in Kenilworth. Hi, Paul. A very good morning to you.
You know, welcome back.
Thank you.
Tell me, having listened to you in the past talking about social distancing, wearing a mask, you didn't go to the beach, you never went to restaurants, you didn't go to malls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How in the hell did you manage to contract this virus?
All right. So, you know, the mask is not there to protect you. Right, well, you know this, right? So the mask.
Yeah, but you didn't go anywhere, you know.
No, I was at the office. I was at a whole lot of, you know. When I say I don't go anywhere, obviously you need to go and get the essentials.
Yeah.
Obviously you need to come into work, and I can't wear sunglasses every day, so I didn't protect my eyes all the time. I didn't always have a visor. I have a visor now. And what I assume happened is that someone who obviously was positive and potentially asymptomatic must have coughed or sneezed or done something. And I, because remember, it's aerosolized and it's just suspended in the air. And you can have your mask on. It's not going to stop you from getting it. It also goes in through your eyes as well. So there were a myriad of ways in which I could have gotten it despite all of that. So yes, I mean, we talk about social distancing, which I still believe in. We talk about wearing a mask, but what you need is one idiot who has the nose exposed and decides to sneeze and doesn't, they don't know that they are asymptomatic, and that is good enough to infect someone.
I see. Okay. So are you still firmly in belief that by not going to the beach, this is likely to protect you?
Yeah, you see, I don't. My initial issue wasn't the beach.
Okay.
My issue was the people who, unfortunately, not. I'm sure, Paul, you can get in the car. I can get in the car, and we can take our 3-4 family members with us to the beach. That's perfectly fine. We'll leave the windows open. But we know how ridiculous taxis are. How they don't stick to the rules and the regulations. And think about a lot of people who aren't as fortunate as us, who have to get into a taxi to make their way to the beach, cramped up, not always protected. They get it. A lot of people then end up going to the Woolworths and the Checkers and the other places that we all frequent, and that is how it gets passed.
I agree with you. I believe that the biggest crowd spreader are these minibus taxis. All you got to do is put one person, infected person, into a minibus taxi with 8 or 10 other people, and
it's not the only spreaders. Which is why I don't feel sorry for some restaurants. We saw the shenanigans on Camps Bay beachfront where people were jollying and having a lecker time, and no masks. Some restaurants, and for those restaurants who didn't do social distancing, who allowed people to, good on them if they've closed. Because I said to the Premier the other day, this nonsense between lives and livelihoods, right, needs to be tempered. We need to be saving those businesses who want to be saved and are not trying to just cash in on profits, which is why I'm dead against what SA Breweries have done. I think they've misread this whole thing. My personal opinion is that, you know, I waited a long time before I can get a hospital bed because hospitals were full. And if you look at the trauma cases that's caused by SA Breweries products, then they've got the gall to want to go to court on some technicality so that people can continue getting pissed, continue doing what they need to do, and continue clogging up our emergency services. Then I tell you what, Paul, companies like SA Breweries, I don't have much time for. And there are lots of other companies there as well. So for me, the main thing is that we need to be looking after the health of our population, because 3-year-olds can get it. My 3-year-old got it. Fortunately, it wasn't bad, but there are many cases of 3-year-olds and babies in ICU and in other care facilities, right? And younger people are getting it. It's no longer the otorpies.
But you can't sacrifice the economy of the country and the livelihoods of so many, many millions of people who also end up with mental disabilities that promote suicide and things like that and depression because of their lost livelihoods.
Yeah,
so one has to balance the scale. And I think in this country we've done it reasonably well, whereas in states like New York and California, they're completely out of their minds.
Spot on, Paul. Remember, I didn't say all businesses need to close. I said it's the irresponsible ones who only want to chase profits, who we need to nip in the bud, basically, at the end of the day. But the others, we need to be saving the economy. I mean, I've...
Tell that to the governors and mayors of California and New York State cities.
Yeah, no,
anyway, thanks for your chat.
Listen, great chat, Paul. Thanks for asking those questions, man. Thanks. Have a lovely day. That's Paul in Kenilworth. Let's go to Devon. Devon's in Table View. Ask Table View today. Devon?
It's hot and sunny, like I'm sure the rest of the Cape is. Morning, Kino. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
I've just tuned in. You may or may not have already discussed this. I don't know. I've just heard that you've had COVID, and I'd like to know from you a first-hand account. It's something that seems to be missing out there. And then from the time... When and how did you first discover or suspect that you had it? What symptoms? What was the progression of the illness until you recovered? You know, the process through it. I'd just like to know a bit about that.
I mean, I can give you broad brush strokes. On the one Sunday, I woke up with a temperature and a bit of a cold sweat, right? And I thought to myself, okay, this is not lekker. And the night before that, I had a bit of a cough. That didn't bother me because, I mean, I cough every now and then or whatever. So, because I've always had upper respiratory challenges. But the morning, I woke up and I said to my wife, listen, I'm not feeling lekker. And what I did was I just took a Dispirin, like a 500 milligram Dispirin. And that brought my temperature down for a little bit. And then it went back up to 37.9, 38, 38.3. And then I thought, okay. I'm just going to err on the side of caution because my mom was at our place at the time. And, you know, my mom's, you know, in her 70s. And I obviously had to be very careful. And I eventually ended up at Netcare and I had an antigen test. I tested positive. My wife tested negative and my son tested negative. My 3-year-old. Anyway, so it started with that temperature, developed into a headache. And that temperature and that headache stayed with me religiously for, 5-6 days until I was too weak. I tried to drink 3 liters of water a day. They said, keep yourself hydrated. I had water. My taste went, my smell went about 2 or 3 days into it. Then I couldn't eat anything. So my wife made me some lovely food that she dropped off at my apartment. I took that in, couldn't eat it. And then decided, okay, I'm going to try and eat the stuff that actually tastes good, which I did. But the smell went away and the taste went away for a good couple of days. I think it only returned when I was in hospital, to be honest with you. But on day 6, I just felt so tired, so weak, I couldn't walk. Dr. Friedland said to me, get to a Netcare. They put me on this thing, and my oxygen levels were, I think, just under 90 or just above. But they were worried, and then they said, no, you need to be hospitalized. There might be COVID pneumonia. And then Professor Diederlem did the scans, and they found, indeed, that I had some blood clots on my lungs, and I had COVID pneumonia. And then they started this treatment. And for me, the main symptoms... Temperature, headache. I couldn't even watch Netflix, man. As much as I wanted to just get away from it, I couldn't do it. So the temperature and the headaches, and then the loss of smell, the loss of taste. When I say loss of taste, it was more as if my taste buds were stuffed up. Things just didn't taste right. I tried Smarties, and they were super sweet. I tried a little tonic water because I had some there, you know. And that tasted like, I don't know, I don't think I've tasted anything like that. But once I was in hospital and I was put on, give you a tummy liner, they give you a course of steroids, it's called progesterone or something like that. They start giving you that to help deal with whatever's happening inside. I had courses of that. They regularly came into the room to check my oxygen levels, to check my breathing. A lot of phlegm in my chest, sometimes a little bit difficult to breathe. I was on oxygen, but, you know, after a couple of days in hospital and after that steroid treatment, I started feeling, if you can call it good, I just started feeling more like a human being.
Yeah.
And then obviously I was released, went home, very weak. I still get, if I think about it, I can't walk very far. Because I get, what do you call it? I get very tired very quickly. Only over the last couple of days did was I able to speak as much as I am at the moment. That's it in a long nutshell.
The worst of your symptoms that you would describe is the headache and the temperature.
Yeah, and then of course you had the clotting of the lungs and the COVID, pneumonia.
The respiratory side of it. Your breathing, were you struggling to breathe?
I did struggle a little bit, which is why they had to put me on oxygen. But once that steroids, you know, started working, I started breathing more easily. I could breathe more deeply as well, because the one thing is you can't breathe very deeply. It's very painful when you breathe deep, when you try and breathe in and breathe deeply.
Okay.
This
is what I wanted to hear. Somebody with a first-hand account of their experience, you know, because you hear sure. People have gotten COVID and they've recovered from it, but nobody discusses how the process was, how it was for them. It seems to be something that's shrouded. I don't know.
My symptoms and my experience was not the worst. Hey? It's just so unfortunate to see people actually struggling for their breath. When you hear of two or three people having died the night overnight, and it is just so disconcerting. And when you hear about how young people are affected, 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds, babies, then you know that this new strain, the people who used to make excuses about it in the past, it's just, you know, they can't anymore.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to ask. Were there many other people at different stages of it with you in the hospital?
Yeah, I had a couple of people. I was in a room with people who pretty much had the same symptoms as I did. The challenge with UCT Academic is, and it's something we need to help them with, right? They are a wonderful hospital, one of the best hospitals around, and Professor Dieter is one of our top two pulmonologists in the country. They have a lot of beds, but they don't have staff. And that is the challenge. You know, you need enough staff to look after people and to give them the proper care. And that to me was something quite glaring when I got in there. And they explained to me, you know, it's really about having the right amount of staff to give the right level of care to people.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the input, and I hope you're well on the mend now.
I feel I am. I mean, I've spoken, you know me, I'm a bubble Vic, and I've been chatting for quite some time now, and I haven't... So thanks a lot, man.
All right. Thanks, you know.
Appreciate it, Devin. Errol, the EFF member that supports the ACDP, on radio the other day. How are you doing?
Kino, welcome back, and I'm glad you are well.
Thank you, my friend.
I don't support the ACDP.
I know, man. I'm pulling your leg.
I just said that if 80% of us being Christians just vote for them, and then they can get the best of the best and to join and run the country. That's all I see.
No.
I'm still EFF.
That's okay.
But you get people that, you know. Anyway, I'm the punch bag, but I take it.
I'm just
teasing you. You know, you made a statement about the breweries. I don't think the breweries is the problem. It is us people. We have a shite drinking culture. We must get gebaat. We can't enjoy a glass of wine or a shot of whiskey or gin and tonic, and that's it. We must get paralytic drunk.
Yeah.
And once you're in that motion, you do funny things, man.
Yeah.
And that is where the problem lies. The drinking culture of South Africans has to change. How are we going to do it? I don't know. I haven't got the answers for that. But that is the problem, sir. It is not the suppliers of the liquor.
I tell you why, the users. Let me explain to you why I disagree with you.
Okay.
It's not just the suppliers. It's the restaurants as well. So, yes, we know South Africans can't hold their alcohol, a lot of them. A lot of them can, right? But we're in a pandemic. Hospital beds are not available. Finish and klaar. If you look at what happened in KZN, if you look at... the capacity that is overstretched, right? You then ask yourself the question, okay, so there's not enough hospital beds. We need to reduce trauma cases. Because restaurants happily pour you dop. They'll pour you four glasses if you want, right? And people get in, they think, I can make it home. And of course, yes, it is. A big problem is with us. But if we keep leaving alcohol on tap, then we know we're going to exacerbate the problem. So my challenge with SAB is the following. They go to court. Essentially, what they want to do is they want their alcohol served in those very same restaurants. Maybe 5% of them who don't, or 10% of them who will just serve anybody and doesn't give a damn, right? That will lead to accidents. That will lead to people being in hospital. That will lead to an exacerbation of the limited beds that we have in hospital. And that is why I blame SAB for wanting to go to the Constitutional Court to get their products back out there again. That is me. I'm not blaming them for people drinking like fish. You got me.
Yeah, I hear your argument, but you know, we must also let the responsibility be on restaurant and pub owners as well.
Yeah.
To see if somebody, look, I can see you can't anymore, so I'm not going to serve you, man, whether you like it or not. If we can get that going, then I think we will go a far way of changing our drinking cultures.
Yeah.
Rather buy your drinks and go drink at home, and then when you go bath, you go sleep.
Yeah, I like this gabar thing. Thank you so much, Errol. Great to hear your voice again. Hey, let's go to Keith. Keith and Mitchell's Plain. A very good morning to you, Keith.
Tino, welcome back, Mr. Fixit. Tino, I know you've been on COVID, and according to me, because I listen to you all the time, is that you were taking all the necessary precautions.
Yes.
How did you get this COVID? Were you in contact with somebody?
Yeah.
Because I'm saying, if you were, I mean, the way you were speaking, you were taking the necessary precautions, avoiding crowds, avoiding gatherings.
Mm.
How did you get it?
It's not foolproof. I explained this to someone earlier. If your eyes are exposed, right, you can still get it.
Okay.
It's not, your mask doesn't stop you from catching COVID. I mean, if you buy one of those blue masks that look like surgical masks, it doesn't stop you from getting COVID. You could still get COVID. It helps limit where your mucus and whatever goes when you sneeze or cough. So it helps it not propel, you know, 1.5 meters, for example. So
it was a shopping center.
It could be a shop. I mean, it could be a shop. I'm now turned to check a 60-60, right? So I try my best not even to set my foot in a store. And then I just sanitize everything when it comes home. But it could have been a store, because I went to get nappies and essentials one day because we needed to do that. I'll go to smaller shops. It could have been there. It could have been anywhere. I don't know. Yeah.
You can take the best precautions, and it's the fall of the dice. Because what I want to say is, in our country, and I just want to agree with my friend, is that the biggest problem in our country, and I'm saying our country, is law enforcement.
Yeah.
It's law enforcement. I want to tell you something, and I stay in Westridge. I don't know if you've been to Westgate Mall, because that's where I shop.
Listen, I grew up, my granny lived at 7 Apple Street, next to the Apostolic Church. I spent most of my high school years there.
I stay right around the corner. I stay right up at the high school.
Okay.
You know, so the one thing I did is I went to the shop, and as I came out, I saw the taxi pull up, because now the taxis have made their own rank opposite the auto zone. So I saw these people pull out, people having the mask around their chin, and some had their mask on, but about 15 or 16 or 20 fell out.
Mm.
So I wanted to see what apparatus they used to sanitize the taxis before the next group get in. Because I'm curious. I thought, maybe I must get something like that, you know, with people in my house and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I want to tell you that 16 fell out, and 16 got straight back in. The guy didn't sanitize the taxis. I thought, okay, maybe the hands. Nothing. So I'm saying is, yes, we want social distancing. We want people to be 1.5 meters. But when you get into a taxi, but when the ministers are around, razzmatazz, and they're taking photos and the videos around, then they will sanitize. So I washed it, and I went down to Promenade just to see, guys, maybe this is just an isolated case.
Yeah.
Taxis are not. The guy tell me, meneer is te veel geld. I'm saying, who means you te veel geld? I say, which is what cost the sanitizer? So people are saying, that's a lot of money. They don't want to. We need law enforcement. And I'm saying, if we're going to watch the beaches and to help the people that are breaking the law, then it doesn't matter what we do. Because I believe the super spreader, and this is me, you know, I don't know, you can go sit at the taxi rank and watch it. is the taxis, because people are crowded into a small space.
Totally agree.
They're rubbing shoulders with one another.
Totally. Keith, got to leave it there, but I want to thank you very much for it. Quick one, Marilyn in Three Anchor Bay. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, morning, Kino. Welcome back, my darling. It's
thank
so good
you.
To hear you. I've been listening to you since you've been started on radio, so it's just wonderful to have you back. And
I really
healthy.
Appreciate it.
I'm COVID positive, so I'm isolating. Oh. And I'd just like to say that you were under wonderful care with Professor Deda. My late sister was suffered from emphysema, and she was in and out of UCT hospital a lot.
Yeah.
And he's, I really respect and admire that man. He's wonderful. Yeah.
He is one of the top medical professionals, and what a humble man as well.
Oh, wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. I respect him so much. Mm. So God bless you, Kino, you and your family. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate the support, Marilyn. That's Marilyn in Three Anchor Bay. Now, Andre Dean Bull, you know what? It's my first time back in a long time, so what the heck? I'm going to continue taking call. It is 27 minutes to 10. Barbara Friedman's going to tell you about all those trending stories. But before we wrap with Dean and Bull, let me just say hello to my bestie. How's it?
How are you?
I'm feeling a lot better.
So nice to have you back on air.
It's great to be back. Hey, I thought to myself,
we have been in contact, and I do know that you have been getting better, but it's been a long journey, and I know a lot of people have been very concerned. So,
thank you, man.
Great to hear that you're making progress. And again, I just, you know, without being negative, I just think one's got to always just be mindful and careful with this virus and its implications.
Even afterwards.
How better you feel. That's, yeah. I mean, in my own minor way, it's taken me 2 months, you know, and I ended up with a secondary bacterial infection, which lots of us have, with absolutely nothing serious, but it just niggles. It niggles and niggles. And you've just got to, you know, again, what we always say, you and I, you know, people out there saying it's just flu and it's nothing.
No,
it just
to hell with that. Not
well,
flu.
I mean, you had a very serious situation, but even in a mild way, it just keeps, it doesn't go away.
Do you get exhausted when you walk too far sometimes?
Yeah, but I must say it hasn't been as bad. I think for me the issue was the coughing, and then I had like a whole sinus coughing situation and a shortness of breath.
Yes.
So eventually, I should have done it long ago. I went to my doctor and I was put onto antibiotics and steroids to help it. And
now the steroids work. Yeah.
I know they do work. They do. Awful though they are, you know, sometimes
you get shiny cheeks, but hey, it's worth it.
Is that why I was looking so fresh?
Yes. I'm going to go to.
I thought I'd got younger.
Bobs, we're just going to go to Dean and Bill. I promised them some time, and then we're going to check out all the trending stories with Barbara Friedman. So we don't even need any stings or those things, Joe. Don't worry about it. We'll go straight to Dean and Mitchell's Plain. Hi, Dean. Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning, Kino.
Morning, sir.
Compliments for the new year, sir.
And to you, hey.
Glad to hear that you and your family is not just on the recovery, but also on the healing, sir.
No, thank you very much, Dean. I do appreciate that.
Kino, sir, I have been in a small way privileged to have flagging. You obviously have seen or known about the story covered by Kaylin Palm, you know, the family of 47 that lives out in Beacon Valley.
Yep.
Now, the story I had been flagging first time in the 12th of June last year already. I'm just going to move on very quickly. This family at the moment, thank God for that, none of them is COVID positive. They are in relatively good health condition, et cetera, et cetera. One of the challenges that we are asking, and yesterday again, we had to have a back and forth again with a local councillor, and also been on the line with Mayor Don Plato to trying to increase the 350 liters of water. We believe that they have now increased it to 400. It needs to be confirmed.
Mm.
But because of the amount of people, 27 children, 20 adults living on the same property. Kino, the challenge here is what we have also presented way back on the 12th of June last year was the city have, and I will be absolutely honest and say I do not know exactly how big the pool of emergency housing units they have at their disposal.
Yeah.
But one of the requests was saying to the mayor, send emails as far as to the premier, if they could allocate just two units of this emergency housing units to two of the families, maximum three, to reduce the number of people on the specific property. You know, it will alleviate not just in terms of their plight, but it will drastically reduce, you know, the risk to all of these people to COVID and any other. However, seven of the families that is there, which is now the children of the mother and the father that is living on the property, they're all on the waiting list. So one,
so many people on waiting lists. At the moment. You know what irritates me? We got 10 billion rand for SAA. Right, which is a useless exercise. We don't have a billion rand for SASSA grants to extend. We don't have the money to make sure that people live with dignity, and that, Dean, is the problem. It's not as if we don't have enough resources. We sometimes wee those resources down the loo, which is just what I think Pravin Gordhan is doing with SAA at the moment.
Yeah, so that has been the challenge. The last one, I sometimes, you know, is known to disturbing some people's demons, and I'm going to be very naughty in doing it again. You know, I've gone as far as challenging some, maybe not challenging it, but requesting for considerations. Some of the many churches, that building that is standing empty, and maybe they all just say, kiddos are the best person to speak about issues because you're going head on with, with the religious institutions, but that is what they need to hear.
Yeah.
I said to them, if just a few of them, the Mitchell's Plain, various other communities, will consider to open up some of their buildings for our people that is living in crowded environments where the people are now in isolation.
Yeah, Dean, I think it's important. I mean, it's also a SASSA issue related to that. The halls, etc. I mean, it's something we're going to have to get into. Let's go to Bill in Franschhoek. Hi there, Bill.
Hi. Morning, Keto. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
You're the first person I've spoken to who was... had the virus. One question. A lot of people have been asking you about you. The thing that interests me is your family. Because if you picked it up, irrespective of where you picked it up for, you and your family are living in the same house.
Yep.
In my head, you should all have been infected. What actually happened?
We were. My mother was there on the weekend. On that weekend. Remember the Sunday I woke up with the temperature. So my wife, Gail, got it. She was COVID positive. My son, Braden, the doctor said, listen, he probably has it. And because he displays sinusy, chesty. She picked me up from hospital when I was discharged. And I went home and then obviously tried to assist the family. But both Braden, my 3-year-old, and my wife went through isolation I'm not saying without any problems, because she did have some severe sinus and her chest was sore, but relatively well is how they went through it. They're both feeling great. My son is still, you know, we're taking him to a pediatrician, but my 3-year-old is still feeling, he runs around, he runs amok. But sometimes he says his tummy is sore, et cetera, so we're taking him to a pediatrician as well. Then my mom got COVID pneumonia, and she was admitted to UCT Academic, and I fetched her. She was discharged about 2 days ago, and she is recovering at our place at the moment. So I'm very fortunate. There are families out there with harrowing stories who've lost loved ones, and it's not easy.
Yes, I can imagine you've been confronted really with death, which very few of us are until our final days. When you said your mum was there, I must admit I was interested in that, because your mum must be at the older end of the scale.
She's 74 at the moment. But you know what she does? She brags, because she says, I'm not coughing. Because I cough all the time. So I switch the mic off sometimes to have a bit of a coughing fit, right? So... she says, I'm not coughing. And she says, I never had a temperature. I'm like, yeah.
Well, actually, to be quite honest, that's a boost for me and my wife, because we are 76 and 77, and your mother's 74. Then hopefully my wife and I are as fit and as strong as your mother, and that, yep, God forbid, but should we get it, at least it doesn't wipe everybody out over, yep, the age of 17. And that's good news all around. Anyway, again, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Paul. I really do appreciate it. Great to hear your voice again.